All right, Shabbat Shalom and welcome to United Israel World Union. This is our Sabbath morning scripture study coming to you live from St. Francisville, Louisiana. It's good to be here with you today. Happy birthday, America. Thanks for everyone taking the time out of their schedule to join with us today and spend Sabbath with us. So it is, it's good to be here. One of the things that I wanted to say, just as a way of easing into the class, in case that you have just found us for the first time today, you have stumbled into or been, let's say it this way, you've been led into a class, a survey, if you will, of the Ten Commandments, better known by the misnomer, the Ten Commandments, but this is actually called a series or a survey on the Ten Words, as they're described in the Bible. This is class number 11. We're in class number 11 of the series. All of the previous classes, and so will be those which come hereafter, are available on YouTube, on Facebook, on Apple Podcast, and you can find them on our website. And we also have transcripts of the classes available after the teaching. John Perry, Baruch, makes these wonderful transcripts, and those will be available as well on our website, unitedisrael.org. Now, I have revised and revised again this Ten Commandment comparison chart of the ten words in English in Exodus and Deuteronomy, side by side. I've revised this several times. I'm not through revising it yet. I found some things last night that caused me to want to tweak it even a little bit more. So what I want you to understand is be patient, because what I'm trying to produce here is the best and most accurate reflection of what the Hebrew says behind these English words. So I'm not going to apologize again. I'm simply going to make a couple of slight changes. They're very slight, but it's going to make it better and better. So we are in the 11th class today, but we're only on the fifth word, the fifth of 10. If you go by, as I am doing, the white spaces, the breaks within the Hebrew text. So we're following this particular order for a very good reason. It's going to make even more sense as we work our way through. But just as I've said in the other classes, there's no indication in the text with numeral one, numeral two, so forth. That is up to the reader, and that's why we have so many variations between different groups. The Christian groups of various denominations have different ways to number them. Within Judaism, there are several ways to number the ten words, if you might look at some of that. But according to the breaks in both Exodus chapter 20 and Deuteronomy chapter 5, this is, today's class will be the beginning of the fifth word of ten words. Now, this happens to be, in today's class, it happens to be the seventh time, we're only in the fifth word. This is why, by the way, it's not called the Ten Commandments, because within the so-called Ten Commandments, there are many commands. We're at number five, and today's class is the seventh negative particle. In other words, the seventh time in five words that a phrase begins, no. I'll give you the rundown. No, it will be to you other Elohim. In other words, there will not be other gods to you. No, you shall make for yourself an idol. No, you shall bow down to them. I'm just going through just the negative. No, you shall serve them. No, you shall lift the name. No, you shall do any work. And then today's, lo tirtzak. Today's class is on the word which simply says, lo tirzak. The question is, what does that mean? Now, I told you that I'm going to have to make a revision. If you look at my translation, you'll get a feeling for why. Because so far, I've been very literal. When I would see in the Hebrew, lo such and such, I would say, no, it will be, or no, you shall make, or no, you shall bow. No, putting the negative particle at the beginning, just as it is in the Hebrew. So, for instance, when I say in Hebrew, no, you shall make for yourself an idol, you could say grammatically, using English syntax, you could say that that really says, don't make an idol. Or don't make for yourself an idol. You could phrase that more smoothly in the English. And what I did in this translation, almost by habit, is I did that in my mind. Because when I'm reading the Hebrew Bible, I'm working on translating and grammar and syntax as it filters through my mind. So I automatically, when I read lo tirzak, if tirzak means murder, or if ratzak means murder, then in my head I say, you shall not murder. Lo tirzak. But if ratzak means murder, and I want to be consistent with what I've done previous, I'll say, no, you shall murder, right? You see what I'm saying? So I want it to be consistent. So I'll probably be revising, and I did that, by the way. I began to bring English grammar and syntax into these following five, whereas the ones before I was very literal. So that's my reasoning there. Now, as we work through today's class, lo tirzak, I'm going to share some things I posted on Facebook that I did a major study on a single word. And I found that I might not have been so accurate in my translation. So that's my confession up front. And that's what I'm going to share with you today. Now, before I get into the content of lo tirzak and what that means and so forth, every word which comes before this word, all that comes before this word, uses God's name or the title in every one of these commands or words. It either has Jehovah or it has Elohim. But from this word all the way through the rest of the 10-word covenant, not a single mention. This caused some people to suggest that, and again, this isn't indicated in the text, but you had two tablets. And according to tradition, on one of the tablets were written all of those dealings with or interactions with that the commands or the words which dealt between humans and God, the divine realm, if you will. Everything about how humans are to interact with God. You're not to have other gods before him. You're not to make another god, so forth and so on. And then everything which, beginning today and follows after today's class, is going to be dealing with mankind to mankind. In other words, there is a clear shift. Once you leave the word that deals with parents, and I talked about that last week, as soon as you cross over into today's, things clearly shift. And it deals strictly with the earth, if you will, the earthly realm. Mankind to mankind. Ramban, Nachmanides, as he's called, you know these different names for these rabbis, the Ramban, not the Rambam, not Rabbi Moses ben Maimonides, but this is Nachmanides. He puts it this way, describing these that we're about to study, he says that these five deal with the welfare of man. The welfare of man. So if you're somehow in the heavenlies. I want you to stay there, but I want you to recognize that I'm going to be talking about factors here on the earth today, right? So the next three, if you look at my sheet, you'll notice give weight. You shall not murder. You shall not adulterate. You shall not steal. Now, a lot has been written on these three. Think about, just in a broad sense, what would our world be if these three were followed? Think about that. No murder, no adultery, and no theft. These three crimes, these three sins have such an enormous negative impact on families, on towns, on countries, and so forth, and our world. Think about the impact. Or just a reduction in any of these. And we're going to talk about these at great deal. But these three prohibitions are pretty much the same in Exodus and Deuteronomy. Remember over the last few weeks, we pointed out that sometimes in Exodus and Deuteronomy, you have quite a bit of difference between the way they're presented. You remember when we talked about Shabbat. The Shabbat in the Exodus. He gives a different reason for the keeping of Shabbat and so forth. But when you get to this particular command, Lo Tirtzak is written exactly the same in Exodus and Deuteronomy. There's no discrepancy whatsoever. Now, if you look at the three, which I just said, Lo Tirtzak and then adultery, you'll notice that Deuteronomy in verse 18 and verse 19, actually all the way through, but just because I'm dealing with these three, adds and. So you shall not murder, and you shall not adulterate, and you shall not steal. On the Deuteronomy side, it reads as if it's one continuous thought. Whereas Exodus, you shall not murder, you shall not adulterate, you shall not steal. Clearly, there is a differentiation there between them. Deuteronomy connects them all. But I want you to understand something, that when I note a difference, in the Hebrew, this is to say and is only a single letter, a vav. So whenever you see and in verse 18, and you shall not, that's just a vav. So it's not like it's a major difference, but I just want to bring those out. There are two prophetic texts that I want to begin with simply to show that these words were spoken, reiterated by the prophets of Israel. So I have two prophetic texts wherein we have these three, because I'm starting broad and then I'm broadly, and then I'm going to work into Lo Tirtzak, but I'm talking about the three. So if you go with me, I want to look at two prophetic texts which contain mention of murder, adultery, and theft. But I want to show you something about these prophetic quotes. They're not technically quotes. The order is switched up in these three. All right, so go with me first, if you will, to Jeremiah chapter 7 and verse 9. Jeremiah chapter 7 and verse 9. Jeremiah asks, will you steal, murder, commit adultery, and swear falsely and sacrifice to Baal? He's got a whole list, right? But his question is, will you commit these heinous acts and then come stand before me? He's speaking for God here. So the order, notice the order is slightly different there. All right, because we have the three, murder, commit adultery, or steal, murder, and commit adultery in a different order. Now, notice also swear falsely. Remember, that was one of our commands as well. So he's basically, what he's telling the people, or he's asking them, is will you have the gall to commit these crimes and then come stand in a holy place? Which is a good question, right? Now, look with me, if you will, to Hosea, to the book of Hosea, chapter 4. Hosea, chapter 4. Hear the word of Jehovah, O people of Israel, for Jehovah has a case against the inhabitants of this land, because there is no honesty and no goodness and no obedience to God in the land. It's not just a modern problem. This is an ancient problem as well. Notice verse 2, false swearing, dishonesty, and murder, and theft, and adultery are rife. Crime follows upon crime. For that the earth is withered, and so forth and so on. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to tell you that the problems in the world today point directly towards violating these 10 words. It's not changed. The problems that we see today in our communities and in the world today all can be fit neatly into these categories. Now, notice again in Hosea 4:2, the order, murder, theft, and adultery. So what we have is, according to the Torah, you have kill or murder, adultery, and stealing in that order. Murder, adultery, steal. Jeremiah has steal, kill, and adultery. And Hosea has kill, steal, and adultery. So these three, though, these three could be taught together because quite often they are grouped together. But I have enough material on these individually to break them apart in the teaching series. So we're going to follow the Torah's order. And so today I'll be dealing with this particular Hebrew word, lo tirtzak, two Hebrew words. In the white spaces, if you'll notice, some of these words are quite lengthy. Well, like, for instance, on the Shabbat, you know, you have several lines of text, almost a whole paragraph. But then on this one, two words, lo tirtzak. Not a lot of expansion. It's just a very sharp command. You think, well, why is that? Is it because we don't need a lot of explanation or some other reason? I'm going to explain that. I think I've uncovered something here. So the question becomes, what does it mean? We know some things grammatically. It's in the second person, masculine, singular, you. You know you. It's got a negative particle, so it's a command, it's a prohibition, and it's addressed singularly, meaning the way I understand this and the way I interpret this is that when you see lo tirtzak, you have the second masculine singular, every person who hears it says, this applies to me. It's to you. The question is, how do we translate the verbal root ratzak? Resh, tzadi, het ratzach. Because you'll see in my translation that in my current translation, when I put this together, I put the English word murder. Well, that tells you where I went at the time. I said, clearly ratzach means murder. It doesn't mean kill because we have examples which would make that problematic. Well, it's amazing what you can find when you study. I'll be the first to tell you that sometimes putting a Hebrew word or phrase into English is a little bit tougher than you might think. Now, I had this all figured out in my mind. I knew exactly what it meant. You shall not murder, because I know in English the word murder, and I know there's a difference between murder and kill. And so I had it all figured out. The English word conveys or carries with it this modern Western differentiation between forms of homicide. So I'm going to focus for a moment on the idea of homicide. Homicide is comes to us from the Latin. If you break it apart, it means a human slayer or a human slaying. So to slay a human, homicide. All right, that's really what we're talking about here. Now, we're going to get into different variations of homicide. There are variations on homicide. So I did a little bit of study into legal definitions, because what I'm looking for here is an appropriate English word to convey what the Hebrew's saying. Is our modern Western understanding of murder, is that what goes in there? Is that what it means when it says you shall not ratzach? Or does it mean something else? Now, I know a lot of you are going, oh, it definitely means this, or it definitely means that. Go ahead. I did that too. All right, so we're going to look at it. So I want to give you a little bit of this. I'm not a lawyer. I don't even play one. But I will say this. You know, it's amazing what you can learn if you just look up and study. So I'm going to give you a couple of definitions to set the stage, give you what our understanding is, and then we're going to look at the biblical idea and see how to best convey this. So kill, if I say kill, it's a more general term, right? And if I say thou shalt not kill, then that's a whole different thing, really. Well, what about this? Well, you know, I start bringing up examples. Well, if somebody tries to kill me, Ross, can I kill them then? What about war? I mean, there are a lot of different questions. What about execution? We have cases in the Bible where execution, if it says don't kill. Now, you know, in the modern world, these very arguments are brought up. People use these to bring up in ethical debate. What does it mean? Should we have capital punishment? And somebody goes, yeah, it definitely means murder because the Bible has capital punishment. Relax, we're getting there. Now, when I say murder in English, in my mind, when I began this study, murder gave me an impression that it dealt with homicide, which was specifically deliberate, unlawful, and intentional. I know what I'm doing. Now, there are shades of that. Like, is it a crime of passion? Did it happen just like that, or did I premeditate? Was there a long thought press? Did I process? Did I plan it out? See, we have different grades within homicide. We have different words that are used to express the complexity of homicide. We break this down even further. We talk about whether it was planned or whether it was a passionate act. Manslaughter. What is manslaughter? You know, we use different words for homicide. There is manslaughter. Now, look, manslaughter is a word that's used to define a form of homicide. And I've looked up the definition because I want to, in other words, I want to know what's forbidden. Not that I ever want to, God forbid, be involved in a situation where I have to or could possibly take a life, but I want to know what God says here. Manslaughter is generally defined as an unlawful killing of a human being without express or implied malice. So it is still homicide, but there is a shade of gray, if you will, in this, because we want to question what we're looking at is intent and motive. Does the Hebrew Bible know about that or care about that? Does it accommodate these various levels or degrees of homicide? It's an important question to me. The legal definition, this is taken from a website that I went to. I try to use reputable sources. So I read this definition. I wrote it down. Legal definition of manslaughter. Manslaughter. Unjustifiable, inexcusable, and intentional killing of a human being without deliberation, premeditation, and malice. Now that brought in more than I thought manslaughter encompassed. I mean, there's some words in there that I would not have expected to find in manslaughter. Now, the distinguishing factor in legal court in Western society between murder and manslaughter is this word we define as malice. Malice. In other words, here's the idea. This is what I learned from my brief law school that I went to this week. Here's what I learned. If a murderer must have malice present. Murder must have malice present. And manslaughter, malice must be absent. Malice is the key. All right? So the manslaughter, now manslaughter can break down even more. Now some of you are thinking, wow, are we ever going to get to the Bible? I assure you we will. Manslaughter has different breakdowns as well. You can have voluntary manslaughter and involuntary manslaughter. Remember, the Hebrew Bible says lo tirtzak. Lo tirtzak. Two words. Now I'm going on and on and on, and I'm not finished. Voluntary manslaughter, legal definition, is intentional, accompanied by additional circumstances that mitigate but don't excuse. There's going to be a test on this, by the way. So you get out a piece of paper. So here's some words that fit into voluntary manslaughter. Voluntary. Provoked, heat of passion, rage, anger. At times, sometimes fright, terror, or desperation could fit into voluntary manslaughter. Someone fears for their life. Someone that, you know, all these things that you could take a human life and be charged with voluntary manslaughter if the things that I just mentioned sort of fit the description of what was going on. All right. Now there's involuntary manslaughter. Involuntary manslaughter is without intent, not from heat of passion, but from improper use of reasonable care or skill while in the commission of a lawful act or a non-felony unlawful act. Generally, we think of negligence that results in someone's death. You're still guilty. You see, you can be charged with involuntary manslaughter. It wasn't intentional. You say, well, I didn't even mean to do that. Yes, but you were riding in a vehicle and the following things caused you to be negligent, or you were reckless and you caused the death of someone, right? You've heard of cases of involuntary manslaughter. Now, all of that is just a very brief covering of different shades of the death of a human, the taking of a life of a human, and how in Western society we differentiate between the word kill and murder. And then under homicide, we break it down into, is it murder? Is it manslaughter? You know, if a person goes to trial, obviously manslaughter carries with it a lighter sentence than murder. Generally, that's the way that breaks down, right? But again, we're looking at what is behind it. So the question is, given all of that, we're trying to put in English, what does Lo-Tir-Tzok mean? That's all we're trying to do. I want to know, do any of the definitions that I talked about, do any of those come close to fitting? Is one versus the other? For instance, in my translation, I said what others have said, that Lo-Tir-Tzok means no, you shall murder. But is that what the Hebrew Bible is saying? Is it saying that it has to be intentional, that it has to be this, it has to be that? Or is it more of a general term? Could someone who commits, causes a human death unintentionally, could they be charged with breaking that commandment, that word, Lo-Tir-Tzok? That's the question. It's a big question. It has all sorts of ramifications. The old thou shalt not kill, everybody knows that one, right? It's memorialized on plaques and banners and billboards and monuments and thou shalt not kill. Charlton Heston, I believe, says those or hears those words on Sinai as the stone is being written on, thou shalt not kill. Now, most of us knowledgeable Bible students say, that's wrong. It should say thou shalt not murder. Isn't that what we say? Work with me here, people. Translators use thou shalt not kill. It's the one that I learned as a little boy. When I memorized the Ten Commandments as a child, thou shalt not kill. But it brings up questions. Brings up questions. Biblical questions. What about the conquest? What about the conquest? The story of how the children of Israel go into the land and they're told, you are going to put this place to the sword. I'm paraphrasing. You're going to utterly slay men, women, children, you know, and so forth. How many cases do we have like that in the Bible? And the questioning mind says, yeah, but wait a minute. If it says thou shalt not kill, and then there's a lot of killing, you know, what about executions? You know, if a person commits this crime, you shall stone them to death with stones until they die. Well, I mean, you know, I mean, it brings up questions. What about warfare? You know, the wars that go on in the biblical text that are all over the place. What about our modern ethical questions today? How do they fit into this? Because there are a lot of ethical debates that go on today, tomorrow, and have for decades and will for decades. And people use the Bible to beat people with, to prove their point, and they can prove both points. You know, some of the best debates that I've seen involve people taking different sides of the biblical equation. People used it to support the freedom of slaves. People used it to support keeping slaves. But when you look at the biblical text and you're looking at modern ethical questions, what do we do with questions that we have today about capital punishment? Some of the most strong opponents to capital punishment at least attempt to use thou shalt not kill. Now, they might not say ever quote another Bible verse, but they'll at least bring God in the equation when it fits. They'll say, even God says don't kill. You know, like that's a big revelation. But that's one of the arguments that people use to say we shouldn't have capital punishment. Now, the other side of that debate, you know what the other side says? Well, I'm sorry, but you're mistranslating the word there. It says don't murder. You can obviously kill because God says kill in these other situations. So what is it? I mean, is it that difficult? I mean, there are other ethical questions that come up. What do we do with the ethical debate? Remember several years ago, this big debate about assisted killing, assisted mercy killing. You know, some of the pros and cons, people would use the biblical text. You shouldn't kill. I mean, it's not our place. What about abortion? I mean, that's a big hot topic, right? People make it political, and there are people who are religious, who are biblical in their orientation, who have different views on that. One group says, well, that's not, you know, really killing. It's not this. It's not that. You know, the debate. But they're going to the biblical text, see? And everything hinges on this. What about cases in self-defense? What if somebody's trying to harm my family? What if a terrorist, God forbid, runs into a store and I happen to have a weapon? What should I do? And I'm trained to use it, by the way. I mean, these are big questions for me. We live in a world where these questions need to be looked at very closely, and it's the reason we're doing this study. As a Bible believer, we want to know what does it say. So we are clearly dealing with homicide. All right? Other words can be and are used to denote homicide in the Hebrew Scriptures. Let's go to Genesis chapter 4. We meet with this crime early, very early in the biblical narrative. If you go to Genesis chapter 4, you'll notice the story is about Cain and Abel. And I'm not going to read you the whole story, but chapter 4 of Genesis begins with Adam and Eve, Adam and Chava, are outside the garden now. They've been cast out of the garden. And it says that he knew his wife, and she became pregnant. And she bore two boys. Now, I believe that the Hebrew text indicates that they're twins. You know, by the way that it's worded, and she continued to bear and so forth. But that's a whole nother class. So I think they're twins, the two boys. And at a certain time, they bring an offering. And Cain's is not looked on with respect, if you will. And he gets mad. And his face falls. His countenance falls. And God questions him about this. You know, what are you downtrodden over? Now, I want to get to the part in verse 8. Go to Genesis 4:8. Cain said to his brother Abel, but we don't get what he said. The text is broken here. And when they were in the field, you see how that's choppy? And Cain said to his brother Abel, and when they were in the field, Cain set upon his brother Abel and killed him. Now, this is the JPS. Now, I'll go to, let me use the ESV. Cain spoke to Abel, his brother. We don't know what they said. And when they were in the field, Cain rose up against his brother Abel and killed him. That's more closely resembling what the Hebrew says. It says, "Vayacham Chayin el Hevel Achiv." And Cain arose or rose up to or towards Abel, his brother. And it says, and he killed him. Now, in this particular verse, the root word is he resh gimel, harag. And it generally is translated as to slay or to kill. So he rises up and he kills his brother. We don't know what kind of weapon he used or if he used his bare hands. We don't have any of the details. And you are now on the jury. Has the preponderance of evidence given you enough to convict Cain? Now remember, in the Torah, later a rule says you have to have some witnesses. How many witnesses do you need? You got to have two witnesses. What if you just have one witness? I'm telling you, I saw Cain killed Abel. Is that enough to convict? Look, we've got some complexity in this case. And then, what if the prosecuting attorney says, now remember, I know this is before Sinai, but work with me. What if the prosecuting attorney says, he clearly has violated the word of Jehovah where it says, lo tirtzak. Is that true? Would the defense attorney say, well, technically, he didn't harag him. I mean, he didn't, you see the difference. He didn't ratzak him, he haragged him. Now, that's bad Hebrew, but the English gets the point across. It's a different verb. But I'm using this to illustrate that there are different words used for homicide. All right? Now, let's keep reading. Let's look at what God says in response to the scene. Then Jehovah said to Cain, where is Abel your brother? And he said, I do not know. Am I my brother's keeper? And Jehovah said, what have you done? The voice of your brother's blood is crying to me from the ground. The voice of your brother's blood is crying to me from the ground. Ladies and gentlemen, one death. One homicide. And it says that the blood cries out from the ground. Now, I know that there are texts, very few, but there are a couple of texts even talking about animal blood. And even that has to be treated with respect. But I will argue and point out very clearly that there is a big, big, significant difference in the shedding of human blood. Takes it to a whole nother realm. One homicide, and Jehovah says that the blood cries to the ground. Now, I'm going to close later with give you a couple of stats. I want you to think about, what if that's true? What if when blood is shed from a human, what if somehow that doesn't penetrate the heavenlies audibly? What if? And listen, it doesn't matter a lot of times people think, well, the person wasn't really innocent. Innocent doesn't even come into the equation. I'm not talking about innocent. I'm getting ahead of myself. But what if? What if blood cries out? Now, just so you know, our word ratzach in lo tirzach is not used in this particular text. So this week what I did was I looked at every single occurrence of ratzach because I want to know, does it include text which support, is it only premeditated third degree or something? Is there a way we can think about it in Western terms, or is it not that clear? To me, that makes a difference. So I wanted to look up everything. And as I was praying and studying early in the week, I just by chance received an email. This happened. And this email was an email from thetorah.com. Now, I don't know if you follow thetorah.com. It's an academically oriented site. Some of you are very fundamentalist in your views, and you might not enjoy all of the articles because it involves some things about critical text criticism and so forth. Now, I'm not talking about text skepticism. There's a difference in skepticism and criticism, but it's some textual critical matters. But this particular article, think about it. I'm studying and praying about, what does the word mean? Does it mean murder? Does it mean kill? And I get this article, and it's called, Does the Torah Differentiate Between Murder and Killing? That's pretty timely. Thank you, Jehovah, because it really opened my eyes. Now, by the way, just to tell you how important I think this miraculous email was, and I don't consider all emails miraculous, but it was so well-timed. A lot of times, thetorah.com sends out emails associated with the Torah portion. Torah portion has nothing to do with this. So this was just, I literally had on the question on my notepad, difference between murder and killing. And the email, does the Torah differentiate between murder and killing? Okay. In the article, by the way, I'll post that link later, the author considers the views of rabbis and scholars and translators. Very, very informative article. And I know that a lot of people who've studied this subject think they've got this all figured out. Look, this whole idea of homicide, there's material on, you have to bring in so much to fully flesh this out. You've got to study the Goel Hadam, the Avenger of Blood. Who is that? That's a big part of this. You have to look at, cities of refuge. You have to look at all these things to really get this. So some people think they've already got this figured out. I did, too. This author, Professor Rabbi Marty Lockshin, begins with a view put forward by, here's another one of those rabbi names, Rashbam. Rabbi Samuel ben Meir from 1085 to 1158. This is when he lives. This view, this author, this Rabbi Marty Lockshin, begins with a view from Rashbam that he says, Ratzach, Resh, Tzadi, Chet, means murder and only murder. He puts forward this argument. That was what I believed. That's what I thought. My translation confirms that. But is he right? Was I right? Are you right? He says that Resh Tzadi Chet refers only to unjustified homicide. Now, what's he saying? He says that there is homicide which is justified. But his point is that if you go to the Hebrew Bible is so consistent on this point that every occurrence of ratzach in all of its forms deals with unjustified homicide. Now, I'll give you an example. Let's look at, I don't want to use that one, that's too good of a translation. Let's go to the book of Numbers, chapter 35. We're going to look at, this is Torah portion, Maaseh, chapter 35 of Numbers, verse 16. Okay, Numbers 35, 16. But if, I'm just going to read a few verses and we'll talk about it. But if he struck him down with an iron object so that he died, he is a murderer. You know what the Hebrew word is? Ratzach. Okay, so he's right so far. The murderer shall be put to death. And if he struck him down with a stone tool that could cause death and he died, he is a murderer. The murderer shall be put to death. If he struck him down with a wooden tool that could cause death and he died, he is a murderer. The murderer shall be put to death. The avenger of blood, there's our Goel Hadam, whole nother study, shall himself put the murderer to death. When he meets him, he shall put him to death. And if he pushed him out of hatred or hurled something at him, lying in wait so that he died, or in enmity struck him down with his hand so that he died, then he who struck the blow shall be put to death. He is a murderer. The avenger of blood shall put the murderer to death when he meets him. Now, by the way, these cases are pretty thorough for the Bronze Age, right? If we were to rewrite this in modern times, we would maybe include some other tools. We might say, and if he shot him with a gun, if he stabbed him with such and such, if he, you know, whatever. But this is saying, look, if he has a stone and he hits him and kills him, he's a murderer. If he uses a piece of wood and he hits him and he dies, it's a murder. If he grabs him with his hands and chokes the life out of him, so it's trying to give you every case. Here are the possibilities. The point is, the intent is there, and it's called a murder. Now, this particular author, Marty Lockson, goes on and shows that there are other words for homicide that can mean unjustified, as in Genesis 4:8, which we just did with Cain. There it says harag. It's still dealing with homicide. It's still not justified, you know, so it's still in our definition. You go, was that murder? Is it manslaughter? Is it, what is it? Is it crime of passion? Do we have enough in the story? Is there forensic? Is there, what are the other qualifications to make a decision? But according to this rabbi, and I found this in my search as well, there are cases of execution. Look at this. Look at Leviticus chapter 20. Leviticus chapter 20, verse 16. Let me make sure that it's okay. If a woman approaches any animal and lies with it, you shall kill the woman and the animal. They shall surely be put to death. Their blood is upon them. This from the priestly legislation. It deals with a gross crime against nature, basically, however you want to define that. But it calls for the death penalty. In there, the word harag is used. Harag. It's the same root word that's used when Cain kills Abel. So, hey, resh, gimel can be used for like murder in our understanding, and it can also be used when we're talking about an approved, authorized, sanctioned execution. Still homicide, still deals with the ending of a life. But according to this study, Ratzach, in Rabbi Lakshin's mind, refers only to unjustified homicide. Unjustified homicide. So in other words, the view of Rashbam and others, me included, was that biblically, Resh Tzadi Chet was narrowly defined as unjustified murder. And this is what is forbidden. And it's why I said, no, you shall murder. While other words for homicide could be used for legal and illegal, sanctioned and forbidden homicide. But is that true? Biblically, it matters. If Rashbam is right, if he's right, it's easy. You simply translate it murder, and you understand that every time Ratzach is used, it means this is intentional, and it fits our Western idea of murder. It's not some of these other cases where manslaughter, you know, it's clearly murder. So if it were that easy, it'd be nice. Go with me back to Numbers 35. Numbers 35. Now let's begin in verse 9. Numbers 35:9. And Jehovah spoke unto Moses, saying, speak to the people of Israel and say to them, when you cross the Jordan into the land of Canaan, then you shall select cities to be cities of refuge for you, that the manslayer who kills any person without intent may flee there. The cities shall be for you a refuge for the avenger, or from the avenger, that the manslayer may not die until he stands before the congregation for judgment. And the cities that you shall give shall be six cities of refuge. You shall give three cities beyond the Jordan and three cities in the land of Canaan to be cities of refuge. These six cities shall be for refuge for the people of Israel and for the stranger and for the sojourner among them, that anyone who kills any person without intent may flee there. So you go, ah, but those are different. See, we're talking about a manslayer there, Ross. We're not talking about a murderer. I mean, what if the Bible said that if somebody murders someone, that they could flee to one of these cities of refuge until such a time that he stands before a congregation for judgment? In other words, until the trial, he's got to be protected. But that's for a manslayer, not a murderer. But verse 11, where it says a manslayer who kills. You know, it's funny that in a lot of places where the translator will see Ratzach, he says murder. But here it says Ratzach and he says manslayer. You follow what I'm saying? So, in this particular instance, it says a rotzeach who smites a soul in error. In other words, there's no intent there. This city of refuge is set up for one known as a rotzeach who unintentionally kills someone. He can flee there and be kept there until, right? But the point I want you to understand is that that's the same root word, lo rotzach, ratzach, lo tirtzach, I'm sorry. Now go to verse 27, go to Numbers 35, verse 27, no, 26. But if the manslayer, rotzach, right, shall at any time go beyond the boundaries of his city of refuge to which he fled. The avenger of blood finds him outside the boundaries of his city of refuge, and the avenger of blood kills the manslayer. He shall not be guilty of blood, for he must remain in his city of refuge until the death of the high priest. But after the death of the high priest, the manslayer may return to the land of his possession. And these things shall be a statute and a rule for you throughout your generations and all your dwellings. Verse 26 again, look at it, where it says a manslayer. But if the manslayer shall at any time go outside, that is a rotseach. It's the same word used in. See, but it's a softer term. It sounds, it's not really, but the idea is that we don't want to say the murderer. See how tricky it is on which English word to use? Because if you say, no, you shall murder, thou shalt not murder in, because you think rutsak means murder all the time. If you say that in the commandment or the 10 words, you got to say it here. It's the same word. The manslayer, and then it says in verse 27 that the Goel Hadam, the avenger of blood, kills the manslayer. He basically murders the murderer. If you translate Tirzak as murder. Now look at verse 30, Numbers 35. If anyone kills a person, the murderer shall be put to death on the evidence of witnesses, but no person shall be put to death on the testimony of one witness. All who kill, or if anyone kills a person, the murderer shall be put to death. Now, literally in Hebrew, the word ratzak is used twice. You shall murder the murderer. If murder is the right word. Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan. Some of you know of Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan. Very well respected. He says, if the blood avenger puts the killer to death, it is not an act of murder. That's the way he translates that verse. It's a very soft way to translate that verse. All right. Now, I want you to do something. Well, let me tell you this first. In Hebrew, it's very clear the same word is repeated, ratzak. Everett Fox, who's very literal, says murder the murderer. Right? Now, look at chapter 35 of Numbers, verse 31. Moreover, you shall accept no ransom for the life of a murderer. Now, all of a sudden, this translation knows that rotzeach means murder. You see how it's fickle. Translators are fickle. They know how to read Hebrew. Why are you going to translate it manslayer in one and murderer in another? It's like there are certain things that you go, no, it needs to be murderer there. Again, moreover, you shall accept no ransom for the life of a murderer who is guilty of death, but he shall be put to death. And you shall accept no ransom for him who has fled to a city of refuge, that he may return to dwell in the lands before the death of the high priest. You shall not pollute the land in which you live, for blood pollutes the land. Key point, people. Blood pollutes the land, and no atonement can be made for the land for the blood that is shed in it, except by the blood of the one who shed it. You shall not defile the land in which you live, in the midst of which I dwell, for I, Jehovah, dwell in the midst of the people of Israel. Very important communication here. Bloodshed pollutes the land. Remember, one homicide and the blood cried out. Think about the world in which we live. How polluted is this land? I don't, wherever you're listening to me from, wherever. You can't pay a ransom for a murder. Now think about that. If I were wealthy and I killed somebody and said, I'm sorry for your inconvenience, here's $1 million. That cheapens life. I said $1 million. What if I said 10 million? What if I said 30 million? What if I said 40? Some people would say, I'll go for that. But it's not right because human life is inestimable. You can't put a price on life. You can't. I can't. And neither can a court system. There's no replacing. How many times have you seen someone on television, or God forbid, you've experienced a tragic loss in your own family through homicide? Excuse me. How many of you have heard someone say, if the person goes to jail, they'll say, you know, there's no bringing him back. This doesn't even touch. I've lost my loved one. You know why that is? Because it doesn't, no matter what you do to the other person, that there's no scale. It's not like you go, well, we're even now. Look, human life is of infinite value, is the way Rabbi Hertz put it. Look at Genesis chapter 9, verse 6. Genesis 9, verse 6. And I just read that there's no remedy for the pollution of the blood on the land. There's no atonement except for the blood of the person who shed it. So if a person sheds blood, their blood shall be shed. Now, this is biblical. This is biblical. Whoever sheds, Genesis 9, 6, whoever sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed, for God made man in his own image. The value of human life is in the fact that mankind is made by the Creator. I'm telling you that, you know, it's like in in Ezekiel chapter 18, verse 4, Jehovah says, all lives belong to me. The problem is not that people devalue whether or not a life matters, regardless of whose life. The problem is that society has forgotten that life belongs to Jehovah. That's the problem. You want a biblical slogan? The world is grappling right now with a secular mindset, crying out for justice, trying to give a secular answer to a spiritual problem. They're crying, they're grasping for a saying that says, we need justice. But they've missed, they don't know this. All lives belong to God. All lives. What is man that you are mindful of him? Psalm 8. God's created man. There's no race mentioned. God's created man in his image. Go to Deuteronomy chapter 4. Deuteronomy chapter 4. Verse 41. Then Moses set apart three cities in the east beyond the Jordan, that the manslayer might flee there. Anyone who kills his neighbor unintentionally without being at enmity with him in the past, he may flee to one of these cities and save his life. By the way, manslayer in Hebrew is rotseach, where it says, this is our word. So a manslayer, rotseach, can flee. But notice what we have there. What we have there is a conditions. Unintentionally, if the death is unintentional, without knowledge, is the way the Hebrew puts it, b'lidiat, without da'at, without knowledge, and then no hatred. That's what differentiates. So a person can be considered a rotzeach, and it can be determined that the crime was not done intentionally, and or it was not done with hatred. It was either accidental or negligence, or it doesn't. You've still committed homicide. You see what I'm saying? The Hebrew Bible knows what we know. The Hebrew Bible knows that things happen. But there are two factors that the Hebrew Bible brings this in. One might ratzach, but we have to ask, was it intentional? Was there hatred? And we try to do that. See, our system tries to do this. Deuteronomy 19. Go with me to Deuteronomy 19, verse 4. Deuteronomy 19, verse 4. This is the provision for the manslayer who by fleeing there may save his life. If anyone kills his neighbor unintentionally without having hated him in the past, as when someone goes into the forest with his neighbor to cut wood, and his hand swings the axe to cut down a tree, and the head slips from the handle, strikes his neighbor so that he dies, he may flee to one of these cities and live. Lest the avenger of blood in hot anger pursue the manslayer and overtake him because the way is long, and strike him fatally, though the man did not deserve to die, since he had not hated his neighbor in the past. You understand that what we're dealing with is someone who ratzacht his neighbor. You forgive my English-Hebrew combination there. It's the word don't ratzacht. Lo ratzacht. Lo tirzacht. Lo tirzacht. But a person can at times commit this. But then the question goes to the two factors. Was it intentional? And was it done in the heat? You know, if a friend of mine and I go and he accidentally kills me, I would hope that my family could at least understand this was a tragic accident. So-and-so didn't mean to kill Daddy. It was an accident. Now, that doesn't bring the father back. You see what I'm saying? Nothing. The value of human life is so precious. So precious. We have to recognize that value. Look at Joshua chapter 20. Joshua chapter 20 and verse 3. That the manslayer who strikes any person without intent or unknowingly may flee there. There shall be for you a refuge from the avenger of blood. He shall flee to one of those cities and shall stand at the entrance of the gate of the city and explain his case to the elders of that city. Then they shall take him into the city and give him a place, and he shall remain there. And if the avenger of blood pursues him, they will not give him up to manslayer into his hand. Actually, Rotzeach, because he struck his neighbor unknowingly and did not hate him in the past. So the person who does commit a homicide runs to this place. He's out of breath. He said, the avenger of blood's chasing me. Here's what happened. I was in the woods. I was chopping wood. The axe head came off, struck Billy, killed him. Let me in. And they're like, okay, we're going to let you in. And then the avenger of blood comes. The elders at the gate say, stop. We're going to have a trial. The angry mob, you can't have vigilantism. The Hebrew Bible forbids this. You have rules in place. There has to be justice, but it has to be just. In Hebrew, in the Bible, death, homicide is called smiting a soul. In English, we say soul. But it's really to strike a life, to smite a life. Nephesh, when we translate nephesh as soul, we get the idea that soul is this part of our being. We think, because we've inherited Greco-Roman Hellenistic ideas, that we are made up of body, spirit, and soul. Not biblical. Not biblical. You are a body with a breath of life in you. Call that ruach. Call that spirit. Body plus spirit equals a living soul. You're not body, soul, and spirit. You are a living soul consisting of body and spirit. Get that distinction down. Because what these faulty understandings do is it leads to faulty ideas. Immortality of the soul is not biblical. It's picked up in mystical Judaism. It's picked up in Christianity. The world talks about immortality of the soul, not biblical. The soul that sins, it will die. You can have a dead soul. Nephesh means life. Nephesh, Tabor translates in the translation, transparent English version, where it talks about, and God breathed into the Adam, it says, and he became a living life breather. It's the way you're trying to, how do you explain nephesh? Not soul. So to strike a soul, if you look, I'll just give you these verses quickly. Numbers 35, verse 11, 15, and 30 have this phrase, strike a soul. Deuteronomy 27, 25. I'm not going to go to these. Deuteronomy 27, 25, strike a soul. And Joshua chapter 20, verse 3 and verse 9 all say strike a soul in English. To smite a life, basically. Lotir Tzak has to do with homicide, the taking of human life. Jacob Milgram, the great scholar, says this, and I agree. The root word is used for homicide, irrespective of intention and authorization. Makes it a little more tough, doesn't it? It's a little tougher to translate. It's more general. It's not so specific. Generally, when it's used, resh, tzadi, chet, generally when it's used, it can be understood the way we understand murder, but not always. There are times when ratzak is used in one form or another to indicate unintentional. And you go, well, how could you couldn't stop if it's unintentional, negligible, or, well, you can still be charged, just like in our courts. Somebody gets a manslaughter charge and they're like, but I didn't mean to do this. It was a tragic accident. I know you didn't mean it, and I'm sorry, but you took a life. See, the problem is we have lost a lot of humanity, has lost the value of human life. But the Bible knows that accidents happen, that there are times where war is inevitable. There are times when we must defend ourselves or innocent people against evil. The Bible knows this. The Bible knows and even commands execution for certain atrocious crimes. And those should take place. But nonetheless, one is told, Lo Tirtzak. Now, I don't know the precise word to plug in there. And I know people might try to help me, and maybe you can. But it doesn't always mean murder like we understand murder. It's really, I like the idea is don't commit homicide. As a rule. And the Bible also gives extenuating circumstances which would be taken into place. But we ought to, when we think about taking a life, we ought to be shocked. Right now is a good time for people to reflect on this. I'm talking about globally. We should be focused on the mass numbers of people who are killed every day, every year. The reason that the Bible uses this term, which can apply in different scenarios, and I now think it's got to be something like, don't commit homicide. Because it has to be ambiguous, because it must give us pause. If people can begin to justify, well, this isn't murder, this is manslaughter, this is, you know, it ought to be, perhaps we need to be taking pause and recognizing that we should always exhibit much, much restraint when faced with any situation in which life and death are in our hands. Because in doing so, we might perhaps regain some of that respect for human life. You know, I looked for some stats, and I'm going to continue to do this. And you know when you look on the web, I'm trying to find reputable stats. I found a UN report, the latest of which was published with 2017 data. So it was published in 2018. It's a couple years old. Globally, death by homicide. You ready for this number? Now wait. When Cain killed Abel, blood cried from the ground, and God heard it. One. 2017. If this data is right. 463,821 death by homicide. What if all that blood cries out? Lo tirtzak means don't commit homicide. Don't slay a human. That's what it means. You want a slogan? All lives belong to God. You can say all souls. When we devalue human life, when we suggest anything other than that life belongs to God, that's when other people who don't respect God or life become rotzeach. Shabbat Shalom. Next week, we pick up with the next in our series. We will be talking next week about adultery. Don't miss it.